Good evening. Thank you very much for coming to the last session of the day, and congratulations on getting all the way through Interactive. If anyone asks, I'm going to say that we've headlined Interactive at South by Southwest. So we're from the games industry, and we've sort of accidentally stumbled into film. So there's probably lots of people in this room that can help us more than we can help you, so we really do want to kind of carry this conversation on afterwards. And I do appreciate you've got parties and things to go to. So feel free to tweet us or heckle us on those tags or at WeAreWolf4. So just to make sure this is what you're expecting to see, here's our Too Long Didn't Read. The box office sales are declining, perhaps. The movie theater experience is still unique, though. We believe that you could extend that using interactivity. But in order to do that, that requires certain technological barriers to be broken. Although even then, the content is actually probably the harder problem than those. And because we come from the games industry, we kind of realize how powerful game systems are, and they can provide that rich content. And you can use that to make what we've made a feature-length game for cinema using game systems. And the last thing, our lasers are freaking cool. And we're going to give you some of those in a minute. So hopefully that's what you wanted. We'll see. So this is our relationship with the people at South by Southwest. We're games, and there's probably some film people in the room. You may realize that we constantly compare ourselves with the film industry and look up to you guys. But it's not all bad for us in games. This is our relationship with web and online. We're Biff, by the way. Although perhaps we're concerned you might rise up against us at some point. So this is the film slash game that we made that we showed at South by Southwest earlier in the week. This was on Sunday. This is called Renga, and it was just shown the once at the Canon Screening Theatre. So this is a 100-player game, which is feature-length, collaborative, designed for movie theatres, and played with freaking laser beams. So brace yourself. The laser pointers are coming. We are going to give some out at some point shortly. To make your life easier, and because we're operating on a much smaller screen than we used to, this is normally for cinemas, we're going to actually get you to move into this quadrant, this kind of closest quadrant to the screen. So if you do want to play, you don't have to move right this second, but you can do. We're going to talk for about 20 minutes first. We're going to give you lasers out to that section. It's going to make your life a lot easier because the screen is a lot smaller than usual. Although if you want to, you can try taking a laser pointer right to the back of the room because it will still work from there, but it will just be a bit shaky. So please don't take these lasers with you. They're our laser pointers, and we need them back. So I wanted to put in a few film and video and games references in this, so I don't know if you'll get all of these. But so we feel like we are the salmon at the moment, which is, this is true of games and movies and everything at the moment, which is the digital distribution model is kind of king. And we're trying to explain our idea, which is kind of completely against that. So we feel like the salmon. And in the Q&A later on, you can destroy us for that if you want, that's fine. So these are the ticket sales for box office movies in America in billions of tickets. And I guess most of you are more aware of these figures than we are. And I've expanded that for dramatic effect. They really look like that. Although things have looked up, I think, recently. There's been some stories that have said that actually in the last few months things are looking good. But generally there's been a drop of, you know, a few hundred million ticket sales over this 16-year low. And there's a number of reasons for this, you know, because people have got better systems at home, or it's too expensive. But things are looking up for the movie industry, I think, at the moment, because you've got such fantastic creative visions due around this time. So it did actually do quite well. We took $6 million over the weekend, and 59% of people want to see it, even though it scored zero on Rotten Tomatoes. So then the other issue, I guess, is there's a lot of kind of backlash against Hollywood at the moment through things like the Y Combinator, call for startups. They're trying to find ways to kill Hollywood. And I think last night there was a party called Screw the Big Screen, We Have the Web. But even though there's kind of this backlash against Hollywood, I think most people would agree they don't want to actually destroy the main thing, which is the movie experience that has remained the same for quite some time. And, you know, it still looks like this. And some people really get this, I think, which is people like Alamo Drafthouse, Woot, and Secret Cinema there, and some other people that are, you know, they're embracing this. And I think Alamo spoke about this last year. So people have done different things in cinemas. They've done things like showed sporting events. And in actual fact, people have preferred to see sporting events in cinemas over actually going to the real event, which is kind of strange. And they've put games in cinemas already. So if we tell people we've put games in cinemas, they say, don't worry about it, it's been done. We've got the Wii, it's fine. So we're talking about something different. We're talking about something where all of the audience can participate at once. And I'm just going to take you through some of the prior work. This isn't a complete list because we haven't got a huge amount of time here, but I'll take you through some of the more important ones. So one of the most popular ones you would have seen is this kind of thing, where a camera is pointed into the audience, and the audience can tilt left and right to steer some object on the screen. So it's popular with kind of big event, corporate events. You know, you can get a load of businessmen steering a car. It sounds very exciting. And this is how it works. It's kind of straightforward. Is you point your camera at the screen, and you do some image processing on that image. And what you're trying to do is really just get a single value from the audience, which is kind of which way are they tilted, and therefore which way do we want the car to steer, or it can be used for a number of other things. Another one very similar to this, also camera-based, is called the magic mirror effect, which is where you point the camera at the audience, but the audience can also see themselves, and so they can knock around beach balls or whatever. And you might argue it's probably easier just to give them beach balls than it is to set up this, but this is done using a technique called pixel differencing, where you just look for the differences between the two images. Although you can do some cool stuff because you can actually connect different cinemas together, so you can have competing cinemas. Other things that are very popular, you'd have seen these kind of stuff before on TV, the kind of voting button pads that have been very popular in planetariums and things. And you can have a number of different inputs that you can use, and we'll show you one of our games later on is could really be implemented using this kind of system. So there's wired versions and the wireless versions of these pads, and there's all sorts of variations. One interesting thing is if you use wired pads, you actually know which seat the person is sitting in, and so you know which person pressed A. So that is an example of a jigsaw puzzle where each person in the audience can just rotate their individual piece because you know exactly who that person is. There's lots of reasons that you might want to use mobile phones in cinemas, and it might in fact put people off, so maybe this isn't such a good idea. And so there's some interesting points to this, I guess, because what it actually gives you is your own secret screen. You can have people playing a game on the big screen, but you've got your own hidden information. So a bit like if you were playing poker, you can know what's in your hand. So Megaphone Labs, they do this with a very simple way, which works brilliant, actually. So it's not a text message type system. It actually opens up a call to their call centers, and it records the input that way. So they get very fast response time. And they've used this for a number of things. Where you dial in. I think it's quite popular on TV over here. That's what their website seems to suggest. So you dial in the number at the top of the screen, you get allocated some kind of avatar on screen, and you can play this game with other people. These things are quite interesting. You can see there's a number of little characters that are being controlled, and each one of those has its own phone number that's kind of hashed out so you can't see it. So that's an interesting way of doing it. They've also done kind of group-based interactions, such as Pong. So this is a sort of a 20 versus 20 version, or 19 versus 17 players, and the two teams are grouped together against each other, and they control shared access of the bats, and which has been done before, actually. We'll look at one of those in a second. Other ways of getting input from the audience include audio. This is quite a popular way because you can just install your microphones around the place, and it's not very invasive. There's a number of ways you can do this. This is a company called Applause, and they can register things like clapping from the audience or the volume of chanting, and they can use that to feed into these small games that they make. One version that I did see that they use over in Japan is they get the audience to chant actual words, and because the words are so different from each other, you can actually use vocal recognition on that quite successfully. So they've actually coined, Applause coined the term massively multiplayer crowd-playing game, because this is stadium games that they're actually doing. The most seminal work in this area is Lauren and Rachel Carpenter's Cinematrix, which you may have come across before. It's first shown at SIGGRAPH about 20 years ago. And the players are provided with these little tiny bats which were originally just paint stirrers. And one side has a reflective green surface, and the other side has a reflective red surface. And again, we use a camera-based system, and you can pick up what's going on in the audience. Are people voting red or green? And you can use that as input into a game or some kind of survey or something. So this is really a kind of Boolean or binary operation, kind of a green or red input, on or off. And also, they kind of divide the audience into two. So you could have one half of the room control one aspect and one half control the other. But again, you're looking at a very limited input. So these are the kind of things that you could do with it. So you can do a survey to see if you agree with me right now, green versus red. And we see that you do, so that's good. Or we can ask you a question like, do you like chocolate, and how much you agree with that? And what you would do is you'd start with your bat on the red color, and then if you look at the bottom of the screen, you can see a small arrow. That small arrow would slowly move across the screen, and at the point you agree, you would turn that over so that it faced green, and we could register that. It would require some kind of training in the audience to do that. Although, for some reason, not many people have voted high in that question. It seems kind of obvious. So people are still doing this. They've licensed this technology in the UK, and they use this again for a kind of corporate events thing. The last one I'm going to mention is the one that's the inspiration for us. So this came out of the iBeam Center in New York from a group called the Graffiti Research Labs. They made this thing called Laser Tag, where they basically take big-ass projectors into cities, project on the side of buildings, and they use high-power lasers, or just a single high-power laser, and you can use that to draw on the side of a building, as you can imagine. So that's the kind of, that sort of technology is the one that we're using. And it's quite a rich technology, because it's really like giving everyone in the audience kind of like a mouse pointer. So it works quite successfully, and you'll get to experience this shortly. So one of the biggest problems with this at the moment is none of these systems are installed in cinemas, in movie theaters. And so the setup that we've developed and that we use, we end up having to carry around with us. So this really kind of harks back to the early days of cinema, where they had to actually, you know, the filmmakers actually took around their film viewing equipment to the cinemas and set them up themselves so they could show them. So we're very much at this point here, really, I think, which is the chicken and egg. You know, what comes first? And in the games industry, we always say that software sells hardware, which is really that you can have the best console in the world, but until you have the game that people want, no one's going to worry about this kind of stuff. So at that point, I'm going to hand over to Adam, who's going to talk about the harder problem, I think, which is the software or the content that goes on top of these things.
Thanks, John. I feel like maybe I'm shorter than the average panelist here because I have to keep doing this to see the time remaining. Maybe I'm just too short. I don't know. Okay, so this is my rather dry subject, the content design problem for these kinds of systems. But really what I mean is this. Because there has been a lot of work done, but we haven't seen very much progress, I think. We haven't seen much commercialization. And I'd like to ask why. And I think this is really not a technology problem, it's a design problem. So the early CG, for example, largely consisted of computer scientists and mathematicians and the like building content. This is their idea of design in CG. But of course, CG changed when people started thinking about the content more seriously and using it to create an expressive medium. So I'm really interested in whether that can be done with crowd games. So as a games designer, one of the things that most interests me about play and games more specifically is the way that they support rich, complex construction of deep mechanics and can really sustain people's attention for a long time. So you might say, well, okay, how can a crowd make complex decisions? Surely it has to be simple. It has to be some simple left-right choice. How can you get everybody to agree in a crowd? Surely it's really going to be like this, right? It's just going to be chaos. Well, one solution to that, which is not really a solution in my opinion, is Here's an example of it. This was written up as a 200-player game in New York recently, but I tried to find out more about it, and in some of the small print somewhere, I found this. What they actually had was a subset of their audience going to do something at the front or in the middle or whatever. So they weren't really, I may be wrong, but I think this wasn't really a 200-player game, but it was marketed as such, which is clever. Well done. But I'm really interested in really having everyone interact with the experience. So there's a really useful definition of interaction from games designer Chris Crawford, the guy in the silly hat here, who talked about it as a dialogue between the player or the user and the machine. And by that he means that both sides need to have a process. It can't just be a simple reaction on either side. You need to have a real two-way conversation between the user and the machine. So you might say, well, how can a load of people have a two-way conversation with a machine? Surely it's not lots of separate conversations, right? It's one audience having a conversation with one machine. And how's that going to work? Surely they're all thinking different things. They've got different objectives. How can this work? It's a bit of a challenge. But then again, on the other hand, you could say, well, there's plenty of people who think that crowds can make very complex decisions and can solve very complex problems. Wikipedia is often cited as an example of this. And, of course, there's a very famous book about this. So my view is, yes, that can work. But the reason it works is because there are many separate points of interaction between the many people contributing to Wikipedia and the outcome. So they don't all have to agree. That's one important point. And they have many separate points of interaction. So to look at that in the Chris Crawford image, you could say that it's more like many users interacting at many different points with separate moving parts on the machine side as well. So more like two societies on either side of the user-machine divide. And I think that's something we've realized as we've built stuff, that we need to offer, even if it's one screen, we need to offer many separate points of interaction with that screen. So the other question is duration. I think there's a lot of evidence that to be a more important medium, you need length, you need duration. Of course, Pixar did this after Luxo Jr. They then moved on to feature length. And that's what we've tried to do with Renga. The arrival of a train at Le Ciotat by the Lumiere brothers was only 50 seconds long, I believe. And this film of Annabelle Moore, the dancer Annabelle Moore, made in the late 19th century by Edison, was only 2 or 3 minutes long. And the explosion of film as a medium goes hand in hand with two things, really. Length, on the one hand, this is the story of the Kelly Gang, the very first feature-length film, which was over an hour long, 1906, I think. And, of course, The Birth of a Nation, D.W. Griffith, which is over 3 hours long in 1915. So that's a huge increase in length. But some people would argue, well, the reason that film was able to do that, to sustain audience attention for longer, is narrative. That's another thing distinguishing the two sides of this image, the existence of narrative. So do we need narrative is a big question. And therefore, are we talking about interactive narrative? How would that work? Which is a very difficult question. There's an interesting Flash application that was published on the web recently promoting the show New Girl with this song Hey Girl, which has anybody played this? It's very interesting. I highly recommend looking it up. It's on the Fox site. And basically, it's a 5-minute music video where you get choices during the video as to what should happen next. And so it's a simple branching narrative, if you like. The thing is, branching narrative has all kinds of problems. it's still going to be the same subsection in each section, right? So if you want more variation, you have to chop it up into smaller pieces. The ride through each subsection will always be the same every time. And so, of course, that means there's a kind of combinatorial explosion of possibilities if you do branch. This is a choose-your-own-adventure book, for those of you who remember such things. That's problematic for many reasons. One is the cost of content production for that kind of material. The other problem, the deeper problem for me, is that there isn't really a system on the machine side in these applications. There isn't really a complex process going on in the machine, so you can't. It doesn't really support play in the sense that really fascinates me. And there are people out there trying to do systemic interactive narrative. This is UC Santa Cruz, their Games and Playable Media Research Group, who are doing really fascinating work. They made the short interactive work Facade, which is a brilliant piece. But it's 15 minutes long, and it took them 5 years to make, and it has two computer characters in it, in one room. So that's quite a painful process. So interactive narrative in the deeper sense is possible, but it's extremely difficult and not really viable right now. So my last point really is just to say, maybe long-form content doesn't need narrative at all, right? People play games for very long periods of time without necessarily requiring a narrative in the sense that we're used to in film. So people are happily playing these games for many, many hours, longer than feature film lengths. I guess the problem there would be, if everybody's doing that, surely they want to do that at different times, right? They don't want to just all have to be together for a fixed time for a live event. Aren't people playing these games casually on and off while commuting or whatever, and maybe interacting with other people online, but they're doing it asynchronously. So isn't that a problem? We're talking about getting everyone together for a long-form live event. Well, I think it is possible, and I think that the long-standing ideas about theatre still apply to us, even if we're not creating plots or having a narrative as such. And I think something we've gradually realized doing what we're doing is that we are sort of trying to make games as theater, a theatrical experience. And things that have been written a very long time ago about dramatic structure are very much still applicable to what we're doing, even if we're not creating live-action narratives or whatever. So our show, Renga, which screened here on Sunday, very much has a dramatic structure. It has three acts, and it was informed by notions of taking an audience on a journey together. And I wouldn't say it's cathartic, but it does have that dramatic structure, and it does have a very clear ending. Unlike some of these more abstract games I mentioned earlier, which are kind of open-ended. So that's really where we got to with what we're doing, which is, it's not like the games we used to make, where people play it at all kinds of different times for very long periods of time. This is a theatrical event. It's a live event. And the liveness of it is very much part of the show. So with that, I think we should move on to the liveness and give you some lasers.
Ooh.
Thank you for your patience.
Cool. So it's laser time. So we're going to give you out some of these. These are very low power, and they're very safe lasers. And you can see me shining it around the room. But please don't start shining them into your eyes or shine them into someone else's eyes. We don't really want some kind of crazy lawsuit on our hands. So if you don't feel you're ready for this kind of responsibility... so we're going to show you three works. We've actually developed about 15 different things using this tech. We're going to show you Jigsaw, first of all. And this really just highlights the tech. This is the very first thing that we built using it. We're then going to show you Murder Mystery, which is more of a stronger narrative structure. And then we're going to give you a quick demo of Renga at the end of this. So you should be able to see that. I can't actually tell if it's working. So, yeah, okay. So it appears to be working, I guess. What does a green laser do? Well, it won't be picked up on this. So the way we've got it set up at the moment, green lasers will not be registered. It only picks up red lasers. So normally we would leave this running for about 10 or 15 minutes. It normally takes a group of kids about 10 minutes to solve this, so there's no pressure, by the way. And normally I would let you kind of figure out for yourself how it works as well, but I'm going to give you some clues because it might make it a bit quicker. We're probably not going to have time to solve this because clearly you're not very talented at this, I'm afraid. So anytime a piece comes on the screen, you'll see that a kind of wavy piece appears. That's the kind of hint piece, and that tells you where it should go. So as you get your jigsaw piece closer to the target, it will actually that piece will turn green, so you know you're getting close to it. In order to move it, well done. Woo. So in order to move the pieces, and this is what people struggle with quite a lot because we've allowed lots of you to play all at the same time, and it takes a while to kind of figure this out. If you put your cursor on the edge of a piece, it will get sucked gently towards that piece. So the game really rewards you being steady. You'll be much more successful that way. And the other thing, if you want to rotate a piece, you just put your cursor over the center of a piece and just gently rotate left or right, clockwise or anti-clockwise. And as you can see, there's now a lot of laser pointers on the screen. And something that Adam alluded to earlier on, this idea that there's only so many points of interaction, and so there's a lot of issues where people are kind of competing with each other. And there's probably some people that are griefing already, which is the people who aren't pleased to see this puzzle being solved and are trying to actually stop that.
I just want to add that there's some people who didn't get pointers, so who wanted them. So if you've got one and you fancy letting someone else have a go at some point, that's cool too. Feel free to move. You can move around as well if you want to see what it's like from different points of view in the room or whatever you want.
Cool. And what I've just done is I've just introduced a lot more pieces. So this means there's less contention over each piece, and you'll probably solve the puzzle quicker. So the easiest way to learn how to use the system is just to find a piece that no one else is using and get the hang of kind of controlling a piece. We'll give you a couple more minutes because you're actually doing better than I expected. I'm going to retract my comment from earlier on.
Never attack the audience, John.
It's okay.
What? They're good at this.
So there's no prizes for guessing what this is going to be. I guess you've figured it out by now. But we have used this in interesting circumstances, actually, to give it a different level of interaction. We used it in a games quiz, so a pub quiz style entertainment for the image round, where people had to guess what the game was. And so what we had five different images of popular games, and the audience had to solve the image in order to guess what the game was. But as soon as you had guessed what the image was, you could then stop playing and you could actually start griefing and stopping the other teams from figuring out what it was. So that added a nice dynamic because this really isn't very game-like. You know, there's not a lot of competition. It's more toy-like. Should we move on? The problem is you're completionists, right? You want to see this finished.
We don't have time.
There you go. Oh, you're doing very well now. Well, that's incredible. How did you... Wow.
We let them do the last.
Go on, this will be interesting. This is how well you can work together as an audience.
Actually, this is a really good example of what I was saying about multiple points of
interaction. Wow, well done.
Although you actually did fine there, but we often find that when it gets down to the last piece with a lot of people, it doesn't work so well. And I think that's because you're all kind of competing over one thing and trying to... You might have a slightly different idea from everyone else. So if there are more pieces in play, it's actually easier for a crowd to play with the system.
Okay, so the next thing we're going to show you is a murder mystery game, which has a bit more narrative structure to it. Let me bring that over. We'll need the audio turned up for this. So we won't talk over this one quite... Hold on, wait there. Let me... Hold on a second. So we need the... Can we get the audio up? Is there audio coming out? So we won't talk over this one quite so much, and we'll let you play it for a few minutes. You can start now.
So this is like Cluedo, I guess most people... Oh, you call it Clue, I think, in the US, do you? We call it Cluedo. Anyway, it's a puzzle about who did it, essentially, with several possible answers.
I admit I did see certain things.
So you're supposed to be working together, and you can shout at each other, that's fine. Child.
We haven't customised this for today, but actually that's quite appropriate for South By at the end of the interactive conference. Oh dear.
Lost. That makes us feel a lot better.
What troubles you, my child?
This is always good when we do it in an audience with parents and kids. It goes down very well.
Yeah, this show was originally designed for a festival with families coming in throughout the day. We did several shows during an afternoon, so we knew it would be a mixed audience.
I admit I did see certain things. Lord Wadham likes to drink and spent most of the evening mixing cocktails at the drinks cabinet. The cocktail shaker could not have left his sight. We must find the truth.
I hope you're all digging my VO here. I am all these characters.
Normally audiences kind of discuss the answer before they just vote on all of them at once. It's up to you though, whatever works.
What troubles you, my child?
Yeah, there we go.
So you think you've worked it out, do you? We must find the truth.
No, you're sticking with the voting for everything at once trick. Fine.
They got it right. That's amazing.
Oh, sorry, of course. Well done. So this is the easiest way to earn some credits, is in the hedge maze. Get the credits. Don't get the credits. You're not... You guys were so good at the jigsaw puzzle as well. I think we need to turn down the...
Right, okay, sorry. Yeah, I've just realised that the calibration in this game is designed for a smaller audience at the moment, so that's why all the buttons are going so fast. So we're going to stop this in a minute. So do whatever you need to do, but we're about to yank this, so...
Well, you can take a guess.
If you want to win, I could just tell you the answer.
No.
But that just ruins
the
whole thing.
So you think you worked it out, do you?
You are so wrong.
Sorry, you failed.
Okay, we put you out of your misery, I think.
So that I should thank you. I should explain that show lasts what, about 20-25 minutes. So after we did that, we were like, oh, okay, you can do longer form stuff. Could we do a really long thing? And that led us to this, which is what we screened at South by this week. So this, at this point, we've moved away from narrative, as I was saying earlier. This is much more of an abstract game. It has strategic gameplay elements. We obviously can't really explain how it works now because it takes a long time to really understand and play. But hopefully you can have a bit of a glimpse of it here.
Okay, are you ready?
This is how it begins. Teamwork is the key. Perhaps hold hands.
Can we have the audio a bit louder? It's more of a sort of a cinema feel. Yeah, thanks.
Going to help you here, by the way.
I encourage you to talk to each other about this. So this is slightly harder than it should be because One of the things we have to do live with this show is calibrate to the size of the audience. This is a little bit too tough.
Shall I help with this? Hold on.
Oh, okay.
It's okay. Don't panic.
It's coming back. So currently, part of the distribution problem John touched on earlier is that, as well as our rig having to go to wherever we do a show, we have to be there to actually run the show as we are now.
This is not even the beginning of the end.
Okay, we'll skip you forward a little bit. So that was the opening credits.
You are on a journey. Harvesting quads to take home. This is your harvester. You can move it around. Well done. Your harvester can be damaged. Protected from harm. Harvester is damaged. Be more careful.
So I'm gonna skip this now.
Survive remaining attack. Harvest some quads.
Okay, so this is the kind of intro to the game where it teaches you about things.
Fantastic.
No, you weren't fantastic. So we're not going to let you play all of this, but we will just move forward into the main game proper so you can see this a little bit. So there's some backstory. Your harvester, which is this little thing you're controlling, is going to fight a boss character, and you're probably going to lose, I would guess. And then we'll come to this stage. So this is when you're now trying to build up your harvester into a much bigger ship that you're then going to go back and face the boss with. So we'll let you play this little bit, and then a little bit of the main game.
Use them to build more walls. Unloading silos. Extend from current walls. 25 quads remaining. Surround to capture. Quads placed. 13 quads remaining. Surround to capture. 12 quads placed. 13 quads remaining. Surround to capture. Well done. Ooh. Build finished. So
we're going to open up to Q&A very soon, but you've seen kind of some of the major elements of the gameplay now. But after this first... That was all part of the tutorial. So the main game alternates between this kind of open defense mode. You might want to... Yeah. So here you're harvesting and you're defending and your base can get damaged and so on. And then you go back into the main strategic element of the game, which is construction. And I think we can show... Can we... I guess they'll have free walls, right?
Yeah, so we can probably jump
okay,
forward.
Okay, so we'll jump into full construction. And so this is about giving you real choices as an audience of where you want to go. There's a sort of unlock target which brings you into the final act of the game. And it's far away, so it takes time to get there. And there are other things for you to do along the way. And this building mechanic, which you just saw, is now used throughout these build phases. But it also has an interesting two-stage vote process that happens now.
Extend from current walls.
So. Every build phase, you can repeatedly choose where to zoom in, and then you build walls in that area. But what's quite hard for audiences to understand the first time is that you have to extend from current walls, extend from current walls, or whatever it says, right? That's my impression of Microsoft Mike. So that actually didn't work because you zoomed to an area that was off the current walls, whereas now that you've zoomed into the middle, you will be able to build. And one of the slight panics we have when we do a show is...
I don't panic.
Yeah, oh, sorry. One of the panics I have when we do a show is, they don't understand the zooming mechanic. What are we going to do? But eventually I get over my anxiety and realize that it's really good that an audience fails initially by zooming somewhere they can't build and then learns about how the zoom works. And then the audience really starts to use the zoom strategically. And is more satisfied, I think, because they haven't just been told, as I am now telling you, what to do. They're discovering that for themselves. So, okay, so I think we can leave it on, but I guess we'll mute the audio. And it should still work fine with the lights up. We didn't have any problem with that earlier, and we can keep that going while we go into the Q&A. But the one thing I should say before we start the Q&A is, you can give your laser pointers back at the end to any of the red shirts that are on the doors. They can collect them back off you. So please give them back. I guess is what I'm really saying. So yeah, we can open the floor up for questions at this point.
Found an optimal audience size. With this audience size, I'm actually finding it very hard to feel like I have any agency in the game. Like, I'm losing my dot on the screen, and I don't know what I'm picking. And I'm also at the mercy of a lot of other people, and, you know, it's hard enough to get six friends to agree on going to one place for lunch, let alone a
exactly.
handful of strangers. So I'm curious how you've kind of mitigated that.
Yeah, well, but to be honest, the main limitation, I mean, one of the major limitations on audience size is actually screen size. Because we're working on a very small screen here, and it was kind of an awkward angle for many of you. And that makes it much harder to have a bit of space around your laser spot and work out which one it is and so on. The screen in the Long Center on Sunday was really big relative to the audience size. It was great. So I think that limitation of I don't know which one is mine is comes in first before the technical limitation. But... A big part of the design of Renga, and we haven't really seen it fully here, is to support a larger audience. But our aim was 100 players with Renga, and which is a lot more. We're doing 50 now. And it worked when we did it initially at Game City Festival last October, the first early version of this. It did work with 100 players. But the earlier demos definitely don't work with such large audiences. Yeah, the Jigsaw and the Mystery game, yeah.
Hi, this is great. Thank you so much. Curiosity, have you found the planetarium organizations to be fans of this? And then Do you know the local? I've got some names for you. And so have you used this, and can you use this in a dome or something other than a flat nature?
Yeah, we would love to. I mean, every March we go to the Game Developers Conference in San Francisco, right? We've just come here from there. And last March we were thinking about doing this. We hadn't started doing it yet. And we went to an amazing event at the California Academy of Sciences in Golden Gate Park in San Francisco, where they have a really fantastic planetarium with digital projection. It's one of the best in the world. And they do this nightlife event where they have bars around the museum and DJs and other things going on. And part of that was they did some shows in the planetarium. And we went in there and we saw this amazing full dome display. And we were already thinking about this stuff. And we were like, we have to do this on a dome. It would be incredible. And we have talked to a number of dome people since then, but we haven't done it yet. I'm sure you can imagine we're using a camera, right, to track the lasers. And you can see the camera there. It's quite in plain sight today. But we would probably need multiple cameras, and we could certainly develop that. We just haven't got into doing that yet. And yes, please, is my answer, really.
All right, and then the other question is, how are you capturing it, and then is the camera? How easy is it for you to switch over to another medium, such as a green laser?
So we've looked into that, actually. We do have green and blue lasers as well that we play with.
Right.
This is one.
Right.
And it wouldn't be very difficult for us to use those as well. But we're quite a small company, and we quite like the constraint of all red lasers. It means that we make collaborative games rather than competitive games, because that's the obvious thing you would do with green and red and blue lasers. You could obviously do crazy stuff where you have multiple screens and multiple colored lasers and hundreds of people, but we've not explored that yet.
There's two things that worry me about games in cinemas or whatever, that people in people's reactions. You mean for kids? That's the first problem. And B, oh, you mean like a competition where we can fight each other and someone will win and someone will lose. And so we're kind of trying to work on fully collaborative experiences at the moment and targeting adults. So, yes, it's certainly possible to have teams in that way, yeah.
You said that one of the limitations is that you have to be around to calibrate it. Is this something that you plan on opening up for other people to be able to use their own devices?
That's a big question. A good question. We were aware from the beginning that we could create a platform here for other people to create content. But we're very keen to create content ourselves and to not become a tech company with a platform, with a sales team and a support team and all this stuff, which is certainly possible. But we're kind of keen to focus on creating experiences and being content creators ourselves at the moment, which means we can't kind of do... We can only wear a limited number of hats at once because of our scale. So
sure. Well,
I'm not really sure, basically, is my answer. Maybe we should talk afterwards.
Sure.
How's it going?
Hey.
I had a question as far as looking at games in terms of a narrative. And I'm guessing you're talking about that in terms of, like, multiplayer narrative, right? Would that be correct to say so?
Yeah, I mean, when I was talking about would we use narrative earlier, I meant for, like, how would you have a crowd making choices in,
right,
in a narrative? Yeah.
So how do you, like... I'm wondering how you feel like something like the game Journey would fit within that kind of schema that you're developing.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we saw some of the presentations that those guys from that game company did about Journey last week in San Francisco. And there's a really interesting mechanic in Journey where players online meet each other anonymously and have a kind of shared journey together and share something, but they don't really communicate fully. That's very interesting. And also, it actually builds on some earlier work by some Belgian developers called Tale of Tales, who created a game called The Endless Forest, which some of you may have heard of. It's still live, I think, online. And basically, it's a 3D world where you go in... it's a 3D world in which you are a deer, a stag, in a forest. And you just wander around in this forest, and you occasionally bump into other people, rather like in Journey. And you can't type, you can't speak to them, and you can't see who they are. But some people get really into this stuff, and clearly it's a much more abstract way of experiencing something with other people. I think the key to, if we were to do narrative, the key for me would be to make it spatial, right? So in Journey, obviously, is a journey. You're progressing through a desert, going somewhere. And I think one of the ways that games tackle narrative well is when they spread it out around a space, and then you're moving around a space and going back on yourself, possibly, rather than just moving forwards through time, as you do in a traditional linear narrative. And I'm really interested in interactive narrative, but it's as I said, it's just a really hard problem.
Right.
There's another game, actually, that's quite similar to Journey, which is Way. Have you seen that before?
What was it called again?
Way. W-A-Y. It's made by Chris Bell and a team of students. And it did win an award at the IGF, the Independent Game Festival, quite recently. Chris Bell went on to work on Journey. So there's a lot of similarities between those two if you wanted to check that stuff out.
Thank you.
Well, I was just thinking about with the narrative. Do you think that would make it more interesting for people whose devices aren't working or are as passive observer of the game, or if they got lost on the screen? Or do you think they need the narrative to be captivated?
Well, we showed the game or film this weekend to a group, a number of who were expecting it to be a film rather than a game. And it worked surprisingly well, I think. There was a lot of people there that weren't expecting a game, and they played along and they seemed to really enjoy it. We had a lot of good feedback afterwards. We've thought of doing it with larger audiences where we give out fewer pointers, so maybe 100 pointers between 200 players, and they get passed around. So there are times when, you know, it's enjoyable for us to watch. We're normally in the projection room. We watch this game being played. We've seen it lots of times before. It's an enjoyable thing to view, even though the narrative isn't that strong. It's a dramatic arc, really.
Also, when we demonstrated this at the experimental gameplay workshop last Friday at the GDC, it was in a room of 1,000 people, and we only gave out like 60 pointers. And we very much encouraged them to pass them around, and they circulated around the crowd for a short time as well. We were only one of many demos in a long two-hour session. But just in those, 15 minutes, lots of different people had a go, and it seemed like a lot of the other people in the room were very excited about it, even though they didn't have a laser pointer.
So if I'm a theater owner, I'm going to request popcorn microtransactions be added as soon as possible, please. Thank you.
Okay. We'll get working on that right away. All right. So I think we're about out, and if I crane my short neck, I can see that we're running pretty well to time. So thank you all so much for coming at such a late stage in the conference, and the red shirts can collect the laser pointers. You don't need to give them to me, but we are going to hang around afterwards, and please do come and talk to us. And we'll see you at the parties later if we don't talk to you now. Thanks.
Cool. Thank you.